malfunction.
Well, it's fixed. It's
right. I mean, it literally was.
Basically, it was just falling equipment. Yeah, not the age of the siren. That was the age of the, some of the electrical equipment in the station. Yeah. Yeah. So we have someone come out looking at all the sirens as well. At this point, it looks like it was more electrical. The housekeeping of the housing of IT actually did a nice job. We have some notifications now that me and Chris and Ron and a bunch of us will kind of be on the loop on it right away. Yeah, so actually IT jumped right on
it. They dazzled the day, I will say.
They dazzled.
Yeah, we always beat people up when they do something bad.
The April 15th meeting of Orville City Council. If you would stand with me to pray, please. Dear Father in heaven, please look down upon us this afternoon and help us to decide things that would be pleasing in your eye. Help us to make sure that the city of Orville is a great place to live, and help us also to be aware of our surroundings. Please make sure that for each of us here in this room and for everyone watching, that you watch over them. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Have roll call, please.
Shoup.
Here.
Wilson.
Here.
Asperis Jr.
Here.
Hampshire.
Present.
Asperis Sr.
Here.
Korfman.
Here.
Larson.
Here.
Thank you. Everyone should have received a copy of the minutes from our April 1st meeting. Are there any additions or corrections to those minutes?
I move we approve them.
Thank you. Second, Mr. Larson.
Wilson?
Yes.
Asperis Jr.?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Asperis Sr.?
Yes.
Korfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Thank you. We have no public comments scheduled for this evening. We'll move to our standing committee reports. Finance, Mr. Asperis.
Thank you, Mr. President. Finance Committee has not met as of recent. I have no report this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Utilities, Mr. Korfman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Utilities has no report.
Thank you. Health and Safety, Mr. Asperis.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have no report for tonight.
Thank you. Move to Parks and Recreation, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I also have no report.
Thank you. Transportation, Mr. Shoup.
Thank you, Mr. President. I also have no report.
Thank you. Planning, Mr. Hampshire.
Thank you, Mr. President. Ditto.
Thank you. And finally, Ordinance and Personnel, Mr. Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. President. Ordinance and Personnel has not met, and I have no report. But. I did have a constituent ask me about this portion of the meeting, and they said, you know, why every week do we read down through the roll and ask whether or not we have a report? And I explained the idea of the standing committees and whether or not there'd be a specific issue before us. And so that's what this is for. Oftentimes our committees haven't met because there isn't a particular issue in front of us. So that's why we have no report this evening and many evenings.
Right. Okay, thank you. We have no special committee reports, and we'll move to administrative reports. Mayor Handworth.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. We'd just like to announce that now that the tax deadline is reached, I would also remind people that the National Day of Prayer is coming up, for those of you that especially need that after tax day. But that is always the first Thursday of May, and so this year that is May 2nd, and that is again going to be held at Schmidt Hall. It's an early morning meeting, starts at 7 a.m., and I'm not sure, I know I've already signed up online, and I think if you just, Google Day of Prayer, is that how?
Sure.
The Ministerial Association is sending that out, so I think you would find it if you tried that. So hopefully we'll have a good attendance there. Last year we had 50 or 60 people, and so we had a very good morning. And
it may be 2019 Mayor's Prayer Breakfast, if they Google that.
Okay, yeah, 2019 Mayor's Prayer Breakfast. Okay, that would probably do it. All right, and that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Move to our Safety Service Director, Mr. Wheeler.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Service Department is working on basin replacements for the upcoming projects. They are also starting work on the DuraPatcher for some of the remaining potholes. Also doing some sidewalk work, and believe it or not, they are also starting the pool opening preparation. So they are busy this time of year. ODOT has informed us that they plan to have the contractor start on the Main Street work the first week of May, with scheduled to be complete before Memorial Day. So we'll definitely keep everyone in the loop as that moves closer. Also, you might have noticed that the sirens did not go off yesterday. They were activated by the work hog. However, there was a fluke, and I do mean fluke, because I've never witnessed this in the 11 years I've been here, the electrical issue that actually caused notification to be sent to them that it was activated and worked, but in actuality it did not work. Our IT department was in today, did a really nice job of fixing the problem, also creating some better backup to the system so that there was a battery backup that was operable and worked. And also implemented a notification system to all the police chiefs, fire chief, and myself. So I do believe that that issue has been rectified. We're just glad that it malfunctioned at a time. Obviously, we didn't have a real tornado in town. So just wanted to update everyone on that in case you've gotten any questions from any constituents. And that's my report for this evening.
I do have a question for you on that.
Sure.
At one time, there was a notification available through the cable TV service and the Safety Service Department where you could break in and make an announcement.
I can do that on the, I do that still on snow parking bans. By the time I get the notification from the National Weather Service and get on there, I promise you, you have already been received the notification via cell phone as well as the tornado siren. So, with the tornado, there's no way from a timeliness standpoint to get on there in a timely manner. And I'd hate to be given a notification in the middle of a tornado actually hitting. So okay. I think from that standpoint, it's just not a timely, it's not very effective from a timeliness standpoint.
Yeah, I've not heard anything on there in many, many years.
I didn't do it this past year, but I did use it the last year on the snow parking bans. We didn't have many snow parking bans this year, and we had them kind of, we got notification ahead of time, so we didn't necessarily meet them at the last minute like I used them in the past.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Armstrong did break in with the tornado warning.
Okay.
So we did get cable. Yeah,
it was on just about every channel.
Yeah.
Your TV was on,
yeah.
Your phone or whatever.
Yeah, it's
car radio.
Too. So I didn't hear it, but
yeah.
Of course, because it didn't play. But I did see it on the. The cable,
right.
It comes through.
Okay. Anyone else?
Question, Mr. President?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Wheeler, I've had several people come to me in the last week or so asking me if the asphalt on South Main Street is defective and they're going to have to grind it all out and replace it. So I talked to Dan Lau this
right.
week. I just want the public to know South Main is fine.
Correct.
We're not going to have to tear it out. I don't know where the rumor
right.
started, but I think there may be some grinding of the North Main section.
Absolutely.
They did the temporary stuff around the storm gutters and that stuff. But just want to make sure everybody knows that South Main's wide. So.
Correct. And ODOT will go back through South Main, though, and make sure that it has made its way through the winter satisfactory. So I won't say that they won't double check and make sure everything's good, but no, there aren't any plans at this point to remove any part of South Main.
Yeah, I think Dan mentioned there's a couple of manhole covers that have sunk, so
Correct. We're
going to have them replace those again. But other than that, he said everything in the south end's good to go pretty much. So,
so far, so good, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you. Well, move to our utilities director. Mr. Brediger.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just two brief notes, kind of dovetailing on Mr. Wheeler's comments. We pretty much fared at that high wind event with Sunday storm without too much problem. We had a few miscellaneous outages. We just had one crew out for about 3 or 4 hours. But we did send a crew out to our member community, Shelby, this morning. They were the ones that got hit by that tornado last night, and that crew has since returned. The only other update I have is, weather permitting, we should begin asphalt repairs on High Street this week and continuing into next week to deal with the areas that were tore up during the water main replacement. So that work should be forthcoming. We appreciate everybody's patience during that time of construction. And that would conclude my report. I do have a couple comments for the resolution tonight, and then we have the utilities annual report later on this evening.
Just to add to Mr. Brettinger's comment there, just to remind people, that's a temporary patch that's going to be put in. We've announced that so many times here, you feel silly saying it, but I had somebody this week still not aware of that was what was being done. They thought that was going to be the finished product. So when we get into August, September, then High Street will be resurfaced entirely.
Yeah, but you know, it will be level with the existing asphalt street in there. It just won't be the final product. That's correct. Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you, Mr. Brediger.
You're welcome.
Move to our finance director, Ms. Strimley.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just have one item this evening, and that is the fund balance report for the period ending March 31st. I would ask council for a motion to approve this subject to audit.
Mr. Hampshire.
So moved.
Thank you.
Second,
Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Junior?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Mr. Senior?
Yes.
Forsman?
Yes.
Lorson?
Yes.
Shu?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our law director is excused this evening, and I have no items to report. We have no old business for tonight, so we will move to our new business.
Resolution 1619. I move this resolution be placed on first reading.
Second, Mr. Corfman.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Esper Sr.?
Yes.
Corfman?
Yes.
Lorson?
Yes.
Shue?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Esper Jr.?
Yes. Resolution 1619. A resolution authorizing the Director of Utilities of the City of Orrville, Ohio, to enter into an agreement and or agreements with the State of Ohio Purchasing Cooperative Department of Administrative Services to purchase one 2019 60-foot distribution bucket truck, or alternatively, to purchase said vehicle from another dealer upon equivalent terms, conditions, pricing, and specifications of the City of Orrville, and declaring an emergency.
Mr. Brediger.
Thank you, Mr. President. I did send Council out a memo on the 9th of April describing what we were talking about in this resolution. This is one of our larger distribution trucks. Truck is about 20 years old. Normally we look at retiring these trucks anywhere between 16 and 18 years, depending on their their years of service and just how well that piece of equipment was originally manufactured. We're at that end of the useful life on this product. We did budget this in our 2019 appropriations. We're looking at about a 9-month lead time on this. We have no problems with this truck. There is no need to pass this legislation tonight. And I'll answer any questions that you might have on that.
I move the rules, regulations, and statutes requiring the reading of a resolution on 3-7 days be suspended.
Second.
Second, Mr. Spears.
Mr. Spears Sr.?
Yes.
Corfman?
Yes.
Lorson?
Yes.
Chu?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Spears Jr.?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
I move resolution 1619 be adopted as read.
Second, Mr. Corfman.
Corfman?
Yes.
Lorson?
Yes.
Chu?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Spears Jr.?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Spears Sr.?
Yes. Resolution 1719. I move this resolution be placed on first reading.
Second, Mr. Wilson.
Lorson?
Yes.
Chu?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Spears Jr.?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Spears Sr.?
Yes.
Corfman?
Yes.
Resolution 1719. A resolution authorizing the mayor to enter into a partnership agreement with the City of Worcester and Wayne County for applying to the Ohio Department Services Agency for a small cities community development block grant for community housing impact and preservation, CHIP, funds, and declaring an emergency.
That was a mouthful. who needs to report on that one?
I can do that, sir. This is a 2-year highly competitive grant program administered through the Office of Community Housing Development, Ohio Department Services Agency. We last received this grant in 2017. We are partnering with City of Worcester as well as the Wayne County as partners in the grant application. The program allows for use for owner-occupied residential renovations, down payment assistance, and rental property renovations for applicants that meet income limits. The Wayne County Metropolitan Housing has historically administered this program for all the partners involved. The application in total for 2019 is $962,500. City of Oroville, if awarded the grant, would receive $212,500. The application is due in May, and we should find out in the fall if we will receive the grant award.
Anyone have any questions or comments? Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. Sorry. In 2017, did we have much participation?
We did. We actually did go through the funds. We had about $112,000. It's a great program for low to moderate income that have housing renovation needs that maybe can't afford them otherwise. We definitely want to get the word out. Obviously, the potential for $212,000 means that we definitely will have the dollars available for folks that need it. So we just need to communicate that and make sure people are aware of the program and are able to utilize it that need it.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
What sort of outreach do you do to make people aware of the? But
we always are advertising on the website. Always try to get it out on Facebook. I know Wayne County Metropolitan Housing also makes their folks that are involved in their program aware of it as well. I think we just need to try to do as much as we can and get it out. If anyone has some ideas, we'd be glad to look at those as well.
Thank you.
Of course, we have to get the grant first, obviously,
sure.
But it would be a great opportunity for our folks that need the help. So.
Anyone else have any comments?
I move the rules, regulations, and statutes requiring the reading of a resolution on 3 separate days be suspended.
Schuler.
Second, Mr. Schuler.
Schuler?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Spears Jr.?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Spears Sr.?
Yes.
Corkman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes. I move Resolution 1719 be adopted as read.
Second, Mr. Corkman.
Wilson?
Yes.
Spears Jr.?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Spears Sr.?
Yes.
Corkman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Schuler?
Yes.
Resolution 1819. I move this resolution be placed on first reading.
Second, Mr. Corkman.
Spears Jr.?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Spears Sr.?
Yes.
Corkman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Schuler?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Resolution 1819. A resolution authorizing the Board of Control to advertise for bids and enter into a contract and or contracts for the resurfacing of West High Street in the city of Oroville, Ohio, and declaring an emergency.
Yes, sir, Mr. Wheeler.
Thank you, Mr. President. As Mayor Hanwerk mentioned, High Street will be completely resurfaced. This is part of an Ohio Public Works Commission grant. As such, we are not allowed to start the work until after July 1. With that in mind, though, we do like to go out for bid early so that we can kind of get in into people's schedule, the contractor's schedule. And so engineering is ongoing. So I present this legislation to you tonight with the idea that once engineering is wrapped up, we can move forward and try to go out for bid and hopefully get a good competitive price and a good contractor.
Questions?
Yes, sir.
Is there a completion date assigned?
There will be. Normally it's 120 days. I don't know on this one yet what it will be. Once the engineer has the design work, we'll know. There is some considerable concrete work involved at the intersections of Vine as well as Crown Hill. So I can imagine we might give a little more time with that knowledge that there's some concrete work involved.
And of course, the reason that I ask is we'd all love to see the job done in one construction season and sewed up.
I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be. Okay. You know, and I think there was some really weird stuff that happened last year with the ODOT project that I don't foresee happening for us unless we get some sort of September winter or something, which I don't wish that.
Well, the interesting thing is, according to the OPWC grant, we can start after July 1st.
Right.
That doesn't mean the contractor doing jobs will be here then. If they're already booked up and they'll say, you know, we can be here in the middle of September, that's when we get them.
And I think that happened with the Main Street project.
They started late last year.
They were kind of in the middle of other projects. The weather had not cooperated on the other projects, so their schedule had kind of pushed back. And as a result, we did have kind of an early winter with some November weather issues. And as a result, everything kind of got pushed back for them at that point.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. So the OPWC grant, we've secured that, right? They will not release those funds till after the 1st?
Yes, we officially received word. We have received the grant. The calendar year for the state of Ohio runs July 1 to June 30.
Right.
So the dollars, the funds are not released until after July 1. Normally around July 1, 1st or 2nd, we get the contract documents in the mail. Once we have those, literally we're able to give the okay to move forward on the project to the contractor.
Okay.
In all honesty, like the mayor mentioned, the contractor is not waiting by the phone for that phone call. Obviously, they have some other projects that they are working on, but ideally they'll get started as quickly as possible in July. We don't allow them to work before the 4th of July festivities anyway, so usually there's a week or two in there anyway that they have kind of to get their stuff together and hopefully mobilize.
So even though the city has... We're funding a portion of it. We're still not allowed to start that till...
No.
Correct.
We're not.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, that would actually jeopardize the state funds.
All right, we don't want to do that.
Okay. Correct.
Yeah, we've asked that before in the past, if we could start with our money, and...
Yeah.
No, we can't do it.
Yeah, I think the answer was go ahead, but you'll be using only your money at that point.
Yeah, the water main replacement was the same way, the same terms.
So maybe we ought to be talking to our new guy, Anthony Gonzalez.
It's very inconvenient, as far as construction goes, that the calendar year with the state is what it is.
Correct.
Because we lose half of the season before we can even start on a lot of these projects. It'd be nice if the politicians in Columbus would come up with a change so that we could start the projects in May rather than the end of July, so.
That would be fantastic, yes, sir. That would open up a lot of more construction window, obviously, for us, yeah.
You have that OMEA legislative day coming up in May. We'll invite you down with us.
I'll consider that.
Anyone else have any questions or comments?
I move the rules, regulations, and statutes requiring the reading of the resolution on three separate days be suspended.
Second, Mr. Porta.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Espere Sr.?
Yes.
Corkman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Chu?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Espere Jr.?
Yes.
I move resolution 1819 be adopted as read.
Second, Mr. Spears.
Espere Sr.?
Yes.
Corkman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Chu?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Espere Jr.?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes. Resolution 1919. I move this resolution be placed on first reading.
Second, Mr. Spears.
Corkman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Chu?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Espere Jr.?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Espere Sr.?
Yes. Resolution 1919. A resolution authorizing the Board of Control to enter into an agreement and or agreements with the State of Ohio Purchasing Cooperative Department of Administrative Services to purchase one 2018, 2019, or 2020 Ford Police Interceptor Utility V6 all-wheel drive vehicle, or alternatively, to purchase said vehicle from another dealer upon equivalent terms, conditions, and specifications, but at a lower price than it can be purchased through the state contract as allowed by Ohio Revised Code Section 125.04, or alternatively, to advertise for bids and enter into an agreement and or agreements for said purchase and declaring an emergency.
Want to go with that one, Mr. Reilly?
Yes, sir, Mr. President. That was short and to the point, wasn't it? This is part of our annual vehicle replacement plan for the police department. It is one new vehicle. As you'll notice, it is an SUV. For those that aren't aware, the Ford Taurus is no longer manufactured, so that is now the only police interceptor offered is the Ford Explorer. We have budgeted for this in our capital budget and our final appropriations, and we will go through state bid process. We all usually typically also offer the opportunity to our local dealership to beat that price as per the resolution as well.
Questions?
Can I answer any questions?
I move the rules, regulations, and statutes requiring the reading of a resolution on three separate days be suspended.
Second, Mr. Wilson.
Larson?
Yes.
Chu?
Yeah.
Wilson?
Yes.
Spears Jr.?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Spears Sr.?
Yes.
Corkman?
Yes. I move resolution 1919 be adopted as read.
Second, Mr. Corkman.
Chu?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Spears Jr.?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Espere Sr.?
Yes.
Corkman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes. Ordinance C-19. I move this ordinance be placed on first reading.
Sure. Second, Mr. Corkman.
Wilson?
Yes.
Espere Jr.?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Espere Sr.?
Yes.
Corkman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Chu?
Yes.
Ordinance C-19. an ordinance to authorize the establishment of the City of Oroville, Ohio Bloom and Oroville Program Fund or its successor program and declaring an emergency.
Ms. Grimlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just to give a little bit of background on this, the Bloom and Oroville program began in 2006. It is completely funded by private donations. Last year we had 280 baskets, 34 downtown planters, and we also did some flower planting and other things with the two gateway signs. Since the inception, the city and the utilities have partnered with two organizations. Initially, we worked with Main Street Oroville. Most recently, we've worked with the Oroville Area Development Foundation. I think you know that our distribution department hangs the baskets. They remove them. The majority of the solicitations and also donations are coming through our utility billing department. Mike Hedberg coordinates all of the other activities for the program. And so now we'd like to establish a fund so that we can bring all aspects of that program internally within the city. After council approves establishing the fund, we'll then forward that legislation to the state auditor and ask for approval from the state to establish the fund. All the monies for Bloom and Oroville will be segregated. It'll appear on the monthly fund balance report that you see. It'll also appear on our CAFR on an annual basis. So it will provide a little bit of additional oversight. It'll also provide complete transparency on a monthly and annual basis. The legislation doesn't have to be passed this evening. If council has any questions or concerns, we can discuss those.
Mr. Larson.
So is the anticipation that it will still be entirely privately funded?
That is, yes, that's the hope. The program's done very well. I think we can all agree it's been a huge success. Everyone has been extremely generous. We appreciate that. It's allowed the program to grow. I think we started initially in 2006 with 150 baskets. So it's grown quite a bit, and it's because of the generosity of our customers and our businesses.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, several organizations have worked hard to get this off the ground.
Yes.
It really operates, and to the point to where it operates very efficiently now. Mm-hmm. And it's very much appreciated by people visiting. It is noticeable by, Mr. Baker, I think you've referenced before,
right,
commercial customers mm-hmm. coming into town. Definitely above Oroville in the summer. It is a big impact, and to be of no real expense to the city,
yes,
but to be a pass-through is mm-hmm. quite an asset.
I've been really happy with it. I started donating back when it first started, and for those of the people out there, it can be added to your utility bill. It's easy. You don't even notice that you're donating money once you get past that first month or two, and then it comes out, and it helps our city really, really put on a good show when people come to town. Anyone else?
I move the rules, regulations, and statutes requiring the reading of an ordinance on three separate days be suspended.
Second, Mr. Corkman.
Caspers Jr.?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Caspers Sr.?
Yes.
Corkman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
I move ordinance C-19 be adopted as read.
Second, Mr. Wilson.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Caspers Sr.?
Yes.
Corkman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Shoup?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Caspers Jr.?
Yes.
That completes our new business for this evening. We're now going to get to see the annual report from our utilities department. Mr. Brady.
No caramel corn?
Consolation prizes. We're going to have a drawing.
Yes.
They keep trying. I had one today where somebody sent.
I think mine is sour cherry. How did you not know about it? I'm trying to think of him. That'd be perfect. I don't know any last name M. Sounds sweet.
Okay, we'll go ahead and get started. Don't mind, my name is Jeff Redeker, Utility Director for Moorville Utilities. I'd like to present our 2018 annual report tonight. I wanted to start off with acknowledging our Public Utility Board. As you're aware, City Charter does put this responsibility for the operation and the maintenance expansion and establishment of all the rates for all three utilities, electric, water, and wastewater. The board appoints the utility director, myself, and then it's my responsibility to provide the necessary oversight over all of our utilities. All of our utilities are nonprofit. They have their own separate enterprise fund. Ms. Kremlin went through that at the last city council meeting. This financial separation also kind of keeps the politics a little bit at arm's length, that allows the utility to operate more like a business, but we still have that local control. There is no formal subsidizing between the city and the utilities. By ordinance, however, the city does receive free electric and for all the buildings, free street lighting, as long as that still remains economically feasible for everybody. Our board members are listed up there. We do meet on the alternating Mondays every month. Just wanted to give you a few highlights of the year. You can read those up in front of you there, but our expenditures were up a little bit higher in 2017 than 2018. These were mainly driven by a couple of large water capital projects and an increase in our transmission fees on the electric utility side. And we'll be talking a little bit more about those later on. As you're aware, we did transition our plant over from a 24-7 operation to a more intermittent peaking plant in 2017. We did hit all of our transmission peaks last year that allowed us to receive the maximum amount of credits from the transmission operating company. We did have our electric rates frozen for the second year in a row. If you do recall, we did renegotiate a new agreement with federal EPA concerning reporting that allowed us some flexibility to operate that plant during those periods anytime throughout the year. If you recall, the EPA was wanting to restrict the operation of our plants, not only on an annual basis, but on a month-to-month basis. And in return for that, we ended up doing a few more streetlights conversions over to LEDs. One of the projects we did at the wastewater treatment plant was a replacement of that facility's main gas burner. And that new gas burner control system is saving our wastewater treatment facility by 20% annually on fuel costs. So we'll have that project paid in a couple of years. Let's go with plant real quick there. We'll talk about the wastewater utility first. As you're aware, this facility handles probably the most complex and dynamic processes of all our utilities. That stream, that waste stream coming into the plant is always ever-changing. You don't know what you're treating until it actually hits the plant. Whereas we can treat water as it comes. We can generate electricity on demand. But that facility operates literally on the fly all the time. We also manage the pretreatment program for 7 industries here in town. And I just wanted to mention Bob Altman has been with us for over 33 years now. This is how the stuff comes in, literally. We do grind this product up and pre-screen it. The effluent is discharged to a creek adjacent to the plant. The water that we discharge to that creek is actually cleaner than what's in the creek. We divert some of that through aquariums that we have in the plant, and we have a small pond in front of the wastewater treatment plant. It also serves to back up a lot of our lab work to ensure that the water quality more than exceeds EPA limitations. I mentioned that we do discharge about 2 million gallons a day into the creek. Some of that is recycled at the power plant, but is pretty much restrictive with some changes that the agency placed on us in 2017. And the balance, the more solid product that does get collected in lagoons, and we send that out to adjacent farms. I won't go into a lot of the financial details because Mr. Inland did an excellent job a couple of weeks ago looking at this, but I wanted to highlight a few sources and a little bit of evolution of revenue there. And I apologize, my dates didn't transfer on this, but the first circle is roughly 2008. And the circle on the top right is just last year. And all that I wanted to point out on that is more the section that is applies to our interdepartmental use. And that use is mainly comes from our power plant. And you can see over the years that has dropped off quite a bit. It wasn't a huge revenue income to the wastewater treatment plant, but noticeable enough that along with the lower usage of the power plant, that's also had some financial impact on our wastewater utility, more on the water side. And also I wanted to mention, too, that our wastewater treatment plant, because of the large number of industrial customers we have here, that plant is sized to serve a community of 35,000 people. This just gives you a quick breakout of our top industrial customers. You can see Smucker's is our largest customer. Up until 2012, they were a very small customer of ours. They had all of their wells. The power plant was about 7 or 8 times the water wastewater customer that it is today. You can see how we stack up against the state average rates. This is the last survey that the state of Ohio did, 2017. They run a little bit behind. But you can see where we are below state average. About 43% of the people that report to this report had increases last year. We were no exception to that. Our customers' usages are actually lower than this. This is based on a state average use. Our customers actually use less than that. Our water utility is next. A little bit of history on this facility. It is our oldest utility. We do fluoridate our water. We chlorinate it. We filter it, and we salt our water. So we have a pretty extensive, very elaborate water treatment facility. And as you can see here, that you know, we have a lot of capacity in this plant. We're operating that plant at about a third of its capacity. That plant was designed to supply all the water to the power plant back when we were operating prior to 2017. We are in the process of having some discussions with the village of Marshallville about the possibility of supplying that village some water in the future. And we could comfortably take on that that community and still have plenty of capacity left. Again, a similar sort of historical view on the water usage, and just wanted to draw your attention to this interdepartmental use. That's mainly the power plant's water usage. You can see in 2018, it would, it amounted to roughly 40% of our water utilities' income. 2017, that shrunk to 13%. Last year was 10%. It'll be under 10% in 2019. That's one of the biggest drivers that we had that led to our rate increase on our water utility a couple years ago. Similar graph to what we saw on the wastewater side, just lets you get a snapshot of where our water usage, our larger customers are, kind of see who's kind of leading the pack. Again, that used to be a lot smaller number prior to 2012. The power plant number used to be the largest game in town for a while. And then the balance of our larger industrial customers pretty much rank out as you see it there. You can see right now with the water increases plan that we had, it pushed us up slightly above the state average. Roughly 50% of the surveyed folks as part of this survey had increases coming last year. We should drop pretty much in line with the state average after next year. And again, that's a high number. Because our customers' usages are lower than what the state average are. But to keep everything on an apples-to-apples comparison, that's where we would fare out with respect to everybody else using the same volume of water. Electric utility is the next. A little bit of statistics there. Orrville is still one of only three communities in the state of Ohio that still have their own electric generation facilities. Besides Dover and the city of Painesville. We sold about 2.5% more energy last year. That was mainly due to the summer coming early in June. We did set a all-time peak in June, which is has not happened in the history of utilities. So that, that early summer brought saw a lot of changes for us. Our plant personnel are probably down a little bit, close to 30% since 2016. And this is due to the transitioning of the plant going from a 24/7 operation down to a more intermittent operation. We did receive our National Association's Certificate of Excellence. This is recognizes our reliability. And this is mainly on the wire side of our business. This a certificate is issued by the federal government. This not only encompasses public power communities and the co-ops, but that also includes your ranking with respect to the large investment rounds. So we are on the top of the best in the country. And this certificate, this recognition, is not not a stranger to us. You've seen this chart before. It kind of shows you the red line where our total retail sales are, and you can kind of see the blue line down below is where our industrial sales are, and pretty much where, depending on how well our businesses are doing, our large industrial customers are doing in the city, they pretty much, you can kind of follow those guys pretty much step in step as far as how the usage pans out. We did see a slight increase in residential usage this year, and again, that was due to that early summer that we had. We saw a little bit of dip in our industrial usage, and that was mainly due to the closure of JLG. You've seen this pie chart before. It kind of breaks out our large or our customer bases, our industrial, commercial, residential. You see half of our sales are industrial related. You can see Quality Casting, our largest customer, is roughly half of those industrial sales. James Smucker Company is about a third of those, and then the balance of our industrial customers make up the rest. Same chart that we've seen on the water and wastewater gives you a little bit more of a breakdown on who our larger energy users are. This really hasn't changed too much over from last year, other than JLG is not on here. But I will point out Marshallville's usage is down about 13% lower this year, and that's because they installed some solar panels in their community about a year or so ago, and that has cut into our sales back to them. This chart sort of shows the top line shows what our monthly sales volume is, and the blue bars is how much of that energy came from the power plant. As you're aware, we're now restricted to operate that plant roughly 10% of the time. So during the times when we are not generating to meet our customers' demand, all that energy comes from our AMP projects that we're involved in, or they're with purchases that we make at the wholesale market. And if you guys have any questions during any of these slides, feel free to stop me and ask along the way. A little walk down a history lane to really show you a lot of the evolution that the energy resources have come from since 2012. Prior to 2012, most of our energy came from the power plant. And you can see over the years, as we've been involved in more projects that we'll talk about a little bit more, our diversity has grown quite a bit. And we embarked on these projects back in the early, late 2000 periods, when we saw a lot of volatility in the marketplace. There was a lot of activity from an environmental perspective, and we just kind of needed to diversify ourselves a little bit more to make sure that we didn't have all of our eggs in one basket. And you can kind of see we've gone from a sole source generating plant roughly 6 years ago to only operating about providing 9% of the energy just 8 years later. This chart gives you an idea of where that energy comes from. Listed below are the various AMP projects that we're involved in. And our top line is what our load growth is, or our demand is on an annual basis. These two blocks of this gray color and this sort of a greenish brown, these are those two 4-megawatt blocks of energy that we purchased starting in 2019 on a wholesale market for the entire year at a below market cost. I just went ahead and ended these other graphs, or there are other generating units at the power plant. I just ended them at 2030 just for illustration purposes, so we have no plans at this time to retire the plant. I just wanted you to kind of see graphically on the resources we have in place today as we go forward over the next a couple of decades on how much of that energy we have secured long term. And the red diagonal striped areas are areas out in the market that we will be looking at for future market purchases, or maybe other future generation projects to sort of fill in the gap. And we look at our power supply makeup on an annual basis. At the end of the day, this is really the bottom line for us. Where do our rates stack up against our competition? So you can see where Orville Utilities lands at with respect to ADP and First Energy. Those are the two investor-owned utilities that surround our service area. And as that's shown there today, that represents, at the end of the year, about a 20% rate differential between us and our two closest competitors. Here's where we stack up against the entire nation. Again, Orville's here. Our public power community peer group is slightly higher. Co-ops are pretty comparable to us in makeup and cost. And you can see our investor-owned utilities that aren't working in that non-for-profit mode. This is where a lot of that really makes a big difference at the end of the day. little bit on the emission side, since 2016, when we started making the changes that the plants implemented all these EPA mandates, you can see how huge of a decrease in emissions that we've reduced since 2016. Now, most of that has come in lower operating time, but a lot of those emissions were achieved when we converted our largest coal-fired unit over to natural gas. Heavy on the button. This is a new chart that I added this year. CO2 emissions, there's a lot of talk about climate change. CO2 emissions are a precursor to that, and you can kind of see what our track record has been over the past eight years. Going forward as a nation, this is what the federal government is looking at as far as what energy resources are going to be around for a while. You know, there's still natural gas developing, renewables, those are trending upward, but to still see coal and nuclear being in the picture for some time, several decades to come. On the renewable side, the chart on the right just kind of shows where those are being developed, and you can see solar and wind are the bigger players in there. A lot of development going on in there, a lot of federal incentives, a lot of technology is advancing that are driving those costs down a little bit. The thing that will bring these things a little bit larger market share will be developing battery storage. We're still have some distance to go on that. I want to talk a little bit about our AMP projects that we're involved in briefly. Our first one are the hydro projects. As you're aware, we have interest in four hydro projects along the Ohio River. These are located on the opposite ends of existing locks and dams. We started building these things roughly 8 years ago, and they were part of a $3.5 billion project that our association took on, and it was one of the larger hydro projects that was undertaken in the United States. They work on the principle of difference in river level. So the higher the water level is on the inlet side of the hydro facilities, that water literally kind of presses its way or forces its way through a water turbine. The blades rotate around, they turn a generator, similar to generators we have at the plant, and then that water discharges out the back end. So the greater the distance between the inlet level of the river and the outlet, the more output you can get out of these water turbines. We've seen this picture before, but this is what one of those hydro facilities looks like before we turned the river loose on it. Most of that plant is submerged. The water turbine units are located behind these screens here. And this would be the normal water level of the river after this unit was constructed. This is that same unit today. And this past February, when we had a lot of rains, that's the same unit with about 12 feet of water on top. You can see right now the river level is the same on both sides. That plant is not generating any electricity, but there is still river traffic on there. So the Army Corps of Engineers can still navigate the river when it's flooded. Hydro plant's not doing too much because the water level is the same. We still have four guys down in there during that time. The structure itself is still about 15 feet above that flood level, even though that entire facility is flooded across the deck up to about right here. They're made to pull people submerged. They're basically like a big concrete submarine. If you look at how our hydro plants operate over the course of the year, you come up with this family of curves. It kind of looks like somebody got turned loose with a bunch of crayons there, but this is how these, because the water level in along the Ohio River varies depending on the operation of the core, rainfall, too much rain, not enough rain, that will dictate how much energy each one of these hydro facilities operate. And you can kind of see in the spring and in the fall where we have a lot of rain or where there's a lot of more diversity in predicting or seeing typical rainfalls, you'll see the production is generally lower. During the summertime, they're a little bit higher. This is by no mistake there. When we were siting these hydro projects more than a decade ago, we purposely selected some of these sites and studied the rainfall and the river flow and how the Corps operated their lock and dam system and targeted several of these hydro facilities that saw the maximum amount of flow past their locks and dams to give us a higher output during the summer when the demand for are generally higher. Prairie State is the last coal-fired power plant that was built in the United States. If you recall, we got into this project in 2012. We just have a small energy output from this facility, only supplied about 10% of our energy last year. This is a $4 billion power plant, about $3 billion built the plant. This plant is also sitting on its own fuel source, so literally about 230 feet below ground on a roughly 800-acre site. We have 30 years of coal supply that also came with the purchase of this plant. Oops. Our Fremont project up in Fremont, Ohio, we're one of 87 AMP members that participated in this project. This is a 700-megawatt facility, roughly 10 times the size of our power plant. It is the energy source that provides the second largest supply of energy to our customers, generated about 39% of our energy in 2018. The wind units down along State Route 30 for traveling heading towards Indiana, you run across these and just before you cross the border. There are 150 of these units, and we receive roughly 2 megawatts from these units. They supplied slightly less than 1.5% of our total energy last year, but they were our third cheapest energy resource. Despite all 150 of those things sitting down there, last year they only generated energy 28% of the time. So all of our energy came from those wind units. We'd be looking around for energy 72% of the time. They work great when the wind's blowing. Similar story for our two solar sites. These also were an AMP project. We have two of those. The largest being just south of our wastewater treatment facility. That's a 2 megawatt site. That unit went in service in March of 2017. The other site is a size about half that size. It's located in the Technology Industrial Park back where Venture Products is at. That unit went online in January 2017. This is what that site looks like today out at the smaller site. Oops. I threw this graph up here. This gives you a Monday through Friday snapshot of how those solar panels actually work during the day. So if you follow me along here, this is about 9, 10 o'clock when the sun finally starts coming up, starts impinging on those solar panels. They start producing more power until the sun is more directly over top of those. This would be about the peak of the day, somewhere in that 12, 1 o'clock range. This entire gap of time is only about 6 hours, maybe 7 hours. Sun goes down and gets black again. These little dips in here are clouds. Ideally, you know, this thing would kind of come up and then would kind of round up there on a totally cloudless day. And as the sunshine set in the west in the evening, that energy capacity would drop off. And Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday were similar days. Friday, a storm came by, a front came through there. So we had a lot of clouds about midday going into the afternoon. So that's why you kind of see that energy output kind of fade out a little bit. And these units, for example, they produced energy roughly 15% of the time. during the year or so. Again, if we relied on solar panels for our energy resource, 85% of the time we would be in the dark. Again, work real nice when the sun's shining. But with the company that we partnered with, we were able to utilize a lot of federal tax credits on these things. And these are a very low-cost energy resource for us, albeit not very much energy for us. Going forward, what are we looking at? We're still looking at the possibility of more market purchases from the grid. We'll be looking at the next period of time after those 4 megawatt blocks expire. We're also looking at some peaking generation possibly being located at our water and wastewater treatment plant. We're looking at larger combustion gas turbines up in the upper left-hand corner to possibly be a solution long-term for us as the power plant gets a little older. And we're talking with a few other wind developers in other states about some other opportunities for those folks too, that will combine some battery storage in their proposals. Our annual report that has a lot more of our financial statistics is all out. It's on our website, as will be this presentation. Oops, runs real quick. This is a quick financial overview. Again, Ms. Strickland did an excellent job on her presentation. She went into a lot more financial details than what I'm going to talk about here tonight. But all our utilities are in great shape. Our electric and water, or our electric and wastewater, are debt-free. We expect to have our water utility out of debt in 2021-22. Total payroll is down about 6%. I mentioned that our spending was up a little bit. And our capital projects are tracking just where we expected them to be in our water and wastewater utilities. I mentioned earlier one of our expenses that was up a little bit this year over 2017 were due to transmission fees. This is a chart the mayor and I took to Washington with us when we met with our legislators there. And these are fees that we pay the transmission owner and operator. These fees get directly passed on to us, and we pass these fees directly on to our customers. We have no control over these. But what we do have control over is we have the ability to offset these fees to be able to be generating during the times when these peaks are being set. And it's our position relative to when these peaks are at that dictate how much credits we can receive from that. So this just gives you a little bit of background on how those charges and credits have been since their inception back in 1996. And when these fees first started entering into our picture in 1996, we were paying about $250,000 a year. You can see what we paid last year. That's about $8.5 million a year. You can see how these prices have been escalating year after year after year. You can see that our credits keep decreasing year after year after year. So this is something that we're keeping our eyes on closely. Despite these large increases, we've still been able to stay back and keep our rates along the lines. So that's not an easy task to do. One of the problems that we have with this is the utilities or they're building these transmission projects are only accountable to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission as a government agency. And the way this works is they determine what projects need to be built. They don't have to go through a very rigorous justification process. They get full cost recovery, and they receive between 9% and 12% rate of return on every project they do, whether or not it benefits the grid or not. And we end up paying for that. Going forward, a similar grocery list to what we've had in the past. We're not getting any younger, but we're still quite capable of doing the things that we need to be doing. Again, we've talked about some of the issues that we have with transmission cost. We've talked about the issues that we've had with our long-term financing on Build America bonds. That was another hot button item that we spoke to our legislators about when we were in Washington last month. We'll be spending more time in the future, and you're going to hear us and Mr. Wheeler, Ms. Drimlin talk about the need for a third industrial park. We have one lot left, and basically the way things go in industrial park, if you don't have it, they're not going to come looking at us. State funding for these parks have been diminishing over the past several years. We're hoping with the next administration down in Columbus, we can start getting a little bit more financial help for that. We're looking between $5 to $6 million to invest in a new park. We're going to have to get pretty creative when it comes to that. And you'll hear us again talk more about that in the months to come yet this year. There we go. The last bit of good news I do want to share with you is on the economic development side. Despite JLG leaving us last year, we still had a positive year. Most of that $6 million investment came from venture product. Still adding jobs. We're expecting Morgan, who purchased the facility. They are talking about investing close to $24 million in that facility and bringing roughly 120 jobs to town. So we're looking forward to meeting with those folks once that sale is finally completed. The last item here, which is pretty big for our county, Wayne County was named again in the top 10 out of 550 micropolitan areas throughout the United States there. And Wayne County has not been a stranger to this, and that's a testament to the lot of work that Mike does, Kristen Ensley down in Steve's office, the Wayne County Economic Development Office, partnering with folks down in the State House to bring that new businesses, those new industries to Ohio first, Wayne County second, and Orville third. And if we can kind of jump Orville to the front of that, we'll try doing that every chance we can get. And with that, that would conclude my report for tonight. Again, this whole slideshow will be on our website if you have some interest. And I will entertain any questions that you might have on that. Thank you.
Jeff, couple things thought come to mind here when you put that chart up about the Orville energy supply and demand with that 0.5% growth. You show in 2023 that there's going to be a shortfall. I know it's a projection. Prior to 2017, when we could run our boilers, we could burn coal. 100%. Now we're limited to 10%. Mm-hmm. And I know the Fremont Energy Plant, us being the AMP members, I think that was a great deal. We are relying a lot on those guys. What's your confidence level of that plant being reliable? We don't see any
problem. We don't see any problem with that. That is technology that's around today, and that facility will be with us for a few more decades. I have no concern with any of our projects. I'm not even concerned about this gap of energy right now, because the energy markets right now, if we look at those going out in the next 5-10 years, there's not a lot of real big concern out there. It's a good time to be buying energy. Our costs at our plant are above where the market's at right now.
Right.
So this amount of gap does not intimidate me in the next 5-10 years.
Okay. Right now. Do you see it at any time where gas will start to climb once it's all out there, everybody's on board?
The consultants we use, and we use several of them because we buy a lot of gas for Fremont, and I sit on that fuels committee.
Yeah.
No, we're seeing a lot of stability in the natural gas market. It's supposed to uptick a little bit in 2019, 2020, then settle back down again, but very negligible. Next decade or so, the natural gas markets are very flat. They're real close to where they were at last year. So we don't expect, and that's part of the reason why, if you look at a couple slides earlier, why the amount of energy coming from the Fremont facility has been increasing each year is because the gas is lower and makes that plant even more more economical to run. It's gone from a plant that was really originally designed to only operate 25-30% of the time. It now operates 50-60% of the time. So I have no concerns with any of our assets. Those are long term investments. Those hydro assets are 80-100 year projects now.
Very well.
Yeah. And once the debt is paid off on those hydro projects, they will be the lowest cost energy we have coming in town. Okay. And we'll have roughly 20% of our energy, more or less, coming from our hydros this year. A little bit over 20% overall in total renewables in 2019.
Anything in biomass?
No, nothing in that area yet. There, that has such a limited application just because there's just not enough volume to do that much with. We've looked at it at the plant a number of years ago, and there wasn't much to operate it much more than a couple months a year.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's...
It was a big talk for a while, but it kind of...
Yeah, it's kind of lost its luster. It has some environmental issues there, but it's pretty much about... just can't keep up with the supply in enough volume to make much of a difference in the grand scheme of things.
Jeff, back to the energy supply slide. Okay. The Blue Creek Wind project seems to stop in 2023. Is our agreement?
It does. Yeah, right. That was a we just buy the energy only from that project, and that term was a 12-year term. And yes, it is due to expire at the end of 2022. We're one of the people that we're talking with today and a few other wind developers out there.
So if it's competitive.
If it still makes sense, we'll keep it in the portfolio. If it doesn't, then we'll kick it out and we'll look at something else.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions? I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Brediger. Anyone have anything for the good of the order this evening? Boy, nobody there. Yes, sir.
Move we adjourn.
Thank you. Need a second, please. Second, Mr. Chu.
Aspera Sr.?
Yes.
Korfman?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Chu?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Spears Jr.?
Yes.
Hampshire?
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our meeting for this evening. Thank you for attending. We're now adjourned.
That's fun. I need to move that here. I should be a five. I should be.
So, yeah, just right. is because you just haven't noticed that was, I think, probably a good one. Because it's pretty much in the same.
No, I don't want to do that. I used the same charge that I did before, and all I did was, the comment box, they were, so I used to do that. That is my fault.